Welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for May 3rd, 2015. And this is Koyo Kobose here, so very glad you joined us. You know, today we're on the road and we're on our way to, we're on a Wi-Fi connection. We're driving to Las Vegas. It's about a 6-7 hour drive from our place in Central California. And I'm going to be getting together with some childhood friends, kind of like a reunion there. And I want to talk a little bit about Hawaii this morning, because our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse is from Hawaii, lives in Hawaii, and the culture there is very unique. You know, I don't remember exactly when, I was in the 50s when they became a state, and it's still a Western paradise, even though a lot of changes, you know, new hotels, new developments are springing up. And if you know the difference, then you say, oh, wow, it used to be, you know, so rural and everything. But we lived there for about 6 months back in the 70s when I took a visiting position in the psychology department at University of Hawaii, and we rented a house this was on Oahu, the island of Oahu, and our oldest son was only 1 year old at the time, but we really enjoyed, of course, the food, I guess it's a lot of it is fusion cuisine, and of course raw fish, tuna is very plentiful. And I remember one funny story was I was driving around and, you know, the kind of tuna is called ahi, and I'd see a sign on the store that said, so much a pound. I said, oh. Then I see another sign that says, oh, it's cheaper. So then I started seeing them looking around. I said, oh, cheaper here, cheaper here. And then I found out that it's different cuts. You know, you get a fish that's caught in the deeper waters, then I guess they have a little more fat on them, and it's more desirable, or if the cut is from the belly. And I think the parallel would be someone who didn't know about steak and came to America, and all they knew was steak, and then they didn't know the difference between the different cuts. So, oh, cheaper steak here, cheaper steak here. But Long's Drugstore, you know, just a regular drugstore, you go in and they have a deli section. And in that deli section are all these tremendous foods that I would be considered, you know, what we call fancy food, you know. But here it is, just all every day spread out on a deli. And so we really love the laid-back island culture, and we learned about the spirit of aloha, and really that's, I don't know exactly, you could probably do a whole lecture and analysis of the aloha spirit. Really it typifies the inclusiveness, the openness, that is a spirit of oneness. And I think a lot of Japanese, of course, a lot of different cultures are there, but Japanese Americans are, you know, in the majority. And so you get a really different vibe in everyday life. And from when you're on the mainland, if there's some visiting people or they came from Hawaii, they have a much stronger personality because they were raised on the islands where they were the majority. And somehow this affects your personality, I think. You know, if you... And I knew a person, a Caucasian couple that... from the South, in South Carolina, North Carolina, and then they went to graduate school in Hawaii. And they had a culture shock experience being a minority in Hawaii. And it's not so much discrimination, but it's just that you're a minority. So if she was in the hairdresser's getting her hair cut, then the hairdresser would say, oh, this is haole hair. You know, haole means white. Not saying that's bad, but it's just different. They're not used to it, see? So when they say that travel is broadening when you travel abroad, it's almost like, you know, you go to a different country almost, and you find out that you're not the center of the universe the way you are, you know, in your own society, subculture, or whatever it is. And to experience that, different food, different customs in terms of everyday things, really you start to appreciate differences. And somebody who's traveled and lived in different countries really can appreciate what this aloha spirit is because, and the openness, inclusiveness, and you're not so parochial, not so raised in a, you know, narrow place where differences are so stark that you know, you have a hard time interacting, you know. Like one time when we went to, I went to graduate school in Iowa, and we lived out in the country. This is Mennonite and in Kelowna, and these Amish people, we went to the local store there, and some children, you know, of course, children, they're very direct, and they looked at us, and one little child reached out and felt my wife Adrienne's clothes, her shirt she was wearing. I guess they thought that maybe the clothes felt differently on this strange, probably was the first Asian person they ever saw live, you know. Again, it's not discrimination, but it's just that the difference, you know, and if it's not cosmopolitan type of way, you're not raised that way, okay. And of course, they're very friendly, and they'll do a lot for you, okay, but you're not one of them. And someone said that, you know, in a big city, you go to Chicago or people won't do anything for you. You're strangers, but they'll accept you. You're accepted because there's so many different kinds of people there. But when you're in a small town in the rural area, they'll be very neighborly and do things for you, but you're really not accepted. You know, you're not one of them. So it's kind of a ironic difference between city and rural generalization that a lot of times seems to hold true in terms of the friendliness and the neighborliness, and yet, you know, if you're not one of them. But when I was in Hawaii, I felt so much at home. Now, I don't believe in prior lives and so forth, but if I did, I must have been Hawaiian in my past life. And I gave some talks there. And one lady, you know, they were all, of course, Japanese Americans, Buddhists from Hawaii, living in Hawaii. When you live in Hawaii, and that's your home, you're called kamaaina, which means a local person. And a lady in the front row said, hey, sensei, you seem like local boy. And I just felt so much at home there. And so I always sort of use that term. I say, yeah, I'm a Kamina, you know. I feel like a local boy. And I had the good fortune to not only be able to live there for 6 months, and then I went back to speak and at different conferences, maybe 3-4 times there, and our family went on extended vacations, driving vacations, and so I feel very Kamina-ish. So I'm going to lead into introducing Marge Elwell, who lives in Hawaii. And, you know, Hawaii from California, the time difference is 3 hours. So our 8 o'clock show in the West Coast here in California, she had to get up before 5 o'clock to call in. So we appreciate that. And without further ado, can I call on you, Marge?
Aloha.
Thank you.
I probably should have given my aloha talk, but I'm not. Thank you for the great introduction and the story about Hawaii. I didn't know you were here so long. That's great. Nice to have a brother with me. My talk today is about Nikon. It's something that we just discovered in the last couple months in our study program from LN7. Nikon is a method of self-reflection developed by in Japan by a man named Ishin. It is structured, uses our relationship with others as a mirror in which we can see ourselves. We reflect on what we receive from others, what we have been given, and what troubles we caused. A sincere examination of ourselves is not an easy task. It's really quite difficult. So I'm using this Nikon in reference to something I'm going through right now. I'm in the middle of chemotherapy, and I decided to use Nikon in my situation. And here's my reflection. First, what I was given. I'm alive to receive this treatment, and I'm alive to receive treatments because my mother, my birth mother, gave it to me, which is really exceptional. And my parents nurtured and protected me. I'm alive to receive this treatment because an oncologist is trying to subdue my cancer. I'm able to walk, think, see, and breathe without too much pain. There are trees for me to see, birds for me to hear, and flowers for me to smell, and fish for me to eat, and spider webs, and so much more. My husband brings me to the airport, where I pick up a wheelchair to go to the airplane. And then there are other, and the wheelchair takes me to the cab to the hospital. My insurance requires that a monthly payment pays for some of the expensive treatments, and we pay the rest. There are magazines and puzzles and comfort seats in the waiting room, and bottled water and hot water for tea and coffee as well. The technician skillfully placed a needle in my PowerPoint. That's the access to my main vein. I'm a very difficult stick. The computer miraculously outputs the results in minutes, while a nurse smiles at me, takes my blood pressure, and answers my questions. And the beneficiary of this marvelous medication and all the research that went into developing it. I'm treated in pleasant, clean environment with sterile equipment. The nurses write on a board my future treatments in 4 days. A nurse left some towels for me and toothpaste and mouthwash. My oncologist receives training and knowledge from many years of experience with observations and research, and in turn passes the benefits to expertise to me. What trouble have I caused? Well, I use valuable resource gasoline to get to my appointment, no doubt causing pollution on the way. I contribute to the wear and tear on the highway and roads. I contribute to the congestion on the highways. I may have slows someone down. I take up a parking spot rather than near the entrance, thus occupying a space that someone else more disabled than me can use. I also take up a chair in the oncology waiting room, as well as time and resource for my care that might serve other people. I create extra work for my doctor, receptionists, and technicians and nurses, and also people who process my insurance claims. My partner worries about me. My partner has to pay extra coverage for my care. My care may contribute to rising the rates of others on the medical group. My doctor is somewhat perplexed and upset with my cancer. Has it reoccurred after 6 months without any symptoms? What did I give? Well, this is kind of speculation. But I suspect that the staff enjoy seeing me come and look healthy and doing well all over. Overall, I mean. I am a favorite of the nurses and they give me a hug, which is great. I'm contributing to jobs and security for more than one person. Perhaps on the recovering end of the services makes me better and more compassionate. And that is all I have to say. Aloha and mahalo.
Thank you very much. You know, to be able to use a Nikon procedure for such a topic as one's chemo is really looking inward reflection, and I think provides a format that leads to deeper insights that you know, one would never have thought about. And I'd like to give a little background in terms of, you know, our lay program is just about 2 years long, and Marge is part of the LM7 group, and they're going to finish up in just a couple of weeks. We call them, when they graduate, they have an induction ceremony. They get inducted as lay ministers for our Bright Dawn Center. And so they started 2 years ago. And, you know, over a year ago, all of a sudden, Marge wasn't on the calls. And so Adrian, who's the administrative director of the program, made an inquiry email, and then her husband answered and said that, well, she suffered a brain tumor. So, wow. And after some time went by, and she wanted to continue in the program. And, you know, this was really amazing. And so, you know, we have a lot of flexibility in our program, and some people that start late or miss some extended time, they could make that unit up by joining the next class that comes along, okay, and they could double up and do it concurrently with their own group. And so that's what Marge did. And I really have to hand it to her. This is why when we're talking about Buddhist or Dharma teachings to everyday life, well, everyday life includes their experiences while they're doing the lay program. You know, life doesn't stop. And all kinds of personal situations occur in people's lives, and it's a direct demonstration and an opportunity, okay, to apply the teachings. And this, I think, is one of the greatest strengths of our particular approach or focus or emphasis in our program. It's that through constant repetition, we're, you know, giving the opportunity to say, you know, the teachings are all around us, and we can access these teachings, okay? And this kind of personal experience is really where the Dharma teachings are. It's where, as one way to put it, is where the tire hits the asphalt, something like that, whatever that quote is, okay? To be able to know that in one's bones, okay, that the teachings are all around us, right in one's own life, okay? And I think that is the one of the main contributions or strengths that we emphasize in our program. So, and in fact, at about 2 o'clock our time, we have their LM7. It's their next to the last session. And this today, in a few hours, they'll be talking about their most significant, we call it Dharma Glimpse, okay, and in the past 2 years, what was the most significant experience, personal experience you had? And this is something that I think anybody can benefit from, taking the time to self-reflect, okay? Or like some famous people have said, an unexamined life is, you know, very shallow. You've got to examine one's life, one's experiences, and everything like this. And so anybody, we could say, oh, someone's on a spiritual journey. But everybody, if you want to put it this way, is on a spiritual journey. Everybody, they're wondering about, how am I living? Okay, whether it's sort of subconscious or not, or certain situations might bring it up closer to the surface of consciousness. But, you know, what's life about? What am I doing? You know, how can I deepen my experiences and be more authentic and be, you know, and so forth? And this is what it means. What does it mean to be leading a good life, a worthwhile life? Okay, and what are one's values? Okay, and if you know, and it's only by self introspection that life becomes rich, and you don't take things for granted, and just getting together with family and friends, you know, is a, to share life together is a tremendous thing. Tremendous thing, even though you say, oh, I'll get together with family, we do it every week or something. Each time is the only time. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going. And you have a very beautiful Aloha Day. Thank you.